Hi, and welcome to the Future of Dermatology podcast. I'm Dr. Farah Kamangar, board-certified dermatologist, and we are here to talk about anything and everything dermatology-related. You'll hear from me and my guests, who are physicians, dermatologists, experts, scientists, and residents in the field of dermatology. We publish weekly, so if you like what you hear, hit that subscribe button and show us some love. Hey, welcome back to the Future of Dermatology podcast. This is Dr. Farah Kamangar, board-certified dermatologist. This episode is another part of our longevity series. We started with Dr. Ozzy, who is a fantastic celebrity cosmetic dermatologist in San Diego, and she shared with us many of her tips and tricks. Today, I'm going to be talking a little bit more about longevity and more into how the term anti-aging is pretty much obsolete and shouldn't really be used anymore. We have in the future another great talk coming up with Dr. Kira Barr, where we will delve into a little bit more about the psychological implications of that term and what that means. But today I'd like to kind of go over a little bit about my experience of what longevity or anti-aging has meant in Silicon Valley. I practice in Palo Alto, California. And when I first came here to practice about eight years ago or so, it was out of residency. And I had my ideas of what beautification should look like, which was at the time synonymous with cosmetic procedures. Since then, there's been a huge shift. It's no longer about beautification necessarily. And by beautification, I mean using our tools to change the ratios and symmetry of someone's face. For example, trying to achieve things like the Phi ratio, the Fibonacci ratio, where we can measure your face with things like calipers and tell you, well, this side is asymmetric to that side, and we need to fill this part and fix this other part. Parts of the world are still very much doing that. It's very popular. Don't get me wrong. But I soon realized that in an area like this, where everyone is very high achieving, very academically oriented, they don't necessarily want all of the ratios of their face to change. They want very much to look like themselves, but a more youthful and functionally heightened version of themselves. So meaning that they would like to halt the bad parts of the break, wear and tear, the breakdown that happens as the numbers go by in years. So that was a really interesting thing that I learned slowly over time. But then I think recently, everyone else is catching up with that as well, with the longevity research just taking off. One of the lectures that I give residents is about this concept. And I talk to them about how Kylie Jenner is like, you know, has done the maximum out of the beautification and she's done a great job at it. She's been very successful. And then I make a joke about what is sexier than Kylie Jenner now. And the next slide that I show is the Krebs cycle, or our energy metabolism cycle that we have within every cell that happens every minute of every day. They, of course, laugh at that. It's a group of nerdy people, so they appreciate that joke. But it really is true. The different checkpoints within the Krebs cycle are now the target of many of the longevity therapies that are being developed. One that is kind of a little bit of a hot topic is, of course, metformin, that there are large trials going on with metformin to show if it can increase longevity in the healthy population. We have trials showing that patients with diabetes are actually doing better and maybe outliving their counterparts because of taking metformin, but we really don't have the longevity kind of longitudinal studies yet to say that it is safe and effective really in a healthy population. We have enough data. I've started prescribing it to some of my patients as well, but I'm really excited for the larger trials that are ongoing now and for the definitive answers to come out on those questions. Of course, what causes aging in the first place, and by that I mean our wrinkles and outward appearance of aging, we know as the fibroblast collapse theory. That's been proven time and time again. That's basically the fibroblasts in our cells and our skin, our cells in our skin that make collagen and lots of other good stuff that give our skin a little bit more substance. So the fibroblast cell over time, in its healthy state, it's stretched out and it's connected to other cells by collagen and other members of the extracellular matrix. Over time, the cells get very shriveled, what we call senescent cells. They lose those attachments. Those things happen intrinsically meaning genetics and just time, and then extrinsically, meaning all the sun damage, smoking, stress, all the other bad stuff we're doing to ourselves accelerates that process. So you get this like sad looking senescent cell. It's lost its attachment. It's sort of synonymous to just being lonely in the world and losing your friends. And you're basically just out on your own. And it's a vicious cycle of getting worse and worse, decreasing collagen production, but also the fibroblasts start spewing out bad stuff like enzymes that are going to basically break down more collagen. It's actually pretty synonymous with kind of social isolation in a way, but the fibroblast senescent theory, we know that to be true. We have our measures to try to stop the extrinsic factors. Everyone's always talking about sunscreen, stop smoking, stop stressing, sleep well, eat well. Those are true. Those are facts. We know those to be true. Harder to do. Behavior is hard to change, but those we know to be true. Then we have our external ways to fix a little bit of it. So you can add back a little bit of collagen, gold standard being our retinoic acid, tretinoin being also the gold standard out of that. It's about 20 times stronger than retinol over the counter. Then you have things like vitamin C, other topicals, then our in-office procedures like microneedling, PRP, fractionated lasers, all sorts of different ways to try to incur a little bit of injury into your skin so that you can build more collagen and better fibroblasts. This is not only a process of anti-aging for wrinkles, but for function as well. For example, a lot of what I see in my clinic are elderly patients with just complete breakdown of their forearms because that area has become so thin over time, or really thinness in their anterior shin area of their lower legs to the point where if they get a small wound, it can turn into a chronic ulcer, which is a huge problem and can really be a burden in their later years of life. So we're not talking only about decreasing wrinkles on the face and crepiness of skin, but function as well, which is probably even the more important reason that we need to pay attention to these things. So we talked about the extrinsic factors. And of course, the main other thing we can talk about, of course, is Botox, right? So Botox is a common one. Many ask, when should that be done? When you think about it, the movement of the 11s or the glabellar complex, that starts happening when you're a baby. You're moving those muscles all the time. You can make a case that babies make that face more often than we do because they're just angry and they're tired and they're hungry, but their skin doesn't fold over like an accordion because they have collagen and elastin. Somewhere in your mid-20s, that changes. You lose enough collagen in your skin towards the latter bit of your 20s, where one day you make that same movement, but then the skin starts to kind of fold over. Of course, it takes a few more years for the lines to start getting etched in, so you're not going to notice a huge difference in your latter 20s, but that's kind of about when it starts happening. Botox, what it does is just stops making that movement, but really doesn't address the skin necessarily. So the collagen still has to be rebuilt, but Botox is of course a very effective thing that we do. Other possible things to add on, of course, we talked about sunscreen. Sunscreens with iron oxide are great. They're gonna add a little bit more protection against the visible range. Polyphenols and antioxidants have a lot of data. Those are vitamin E, C, green tea phenols. Topically or orally, those medications can help. Polypodium leucotomus, that is an ingredient that has some data that can prevent against sunburn. Nicotinamide is one of our studied supplements that we know can help decrease risk of non-melanoma skin cancer and actinic keratosis. So if you are a person who's having a lot of those epidermal neoplasms or skin cancers, you might want to look into nicotinamide. And then, of course, retinoids we talked about, they are the holy grail of building collagen, inducing your skin to thicken again. That's a common problem that many ask is when their skin gets thin and breaks open easily, for example, even on the forearms or shins, how can you thicken skin again? It's a slow process with a retinoid, but it's possible to do so. They also increase hyaluronic acid, fibronectin, so just adding a little bit more moisture into the skin as well, increase procollagen 1, procollagen 3, and basically increase collagen and decrease the enzymes that break down collagen. So the reverse of what the sad fibroblast does. The other things you can think about, of course, is the other parts of the Krebs cycle, as we discussed. A lot of people are doing things like the NAD or NADP injectables and things like that. We still need a little bit more data, but there's a lot of that, you know, of course, happening. And a lot of that is kind of out there. Some may be a little bit premature, but might not have a whole lot of data, but some are relatively harmless. So there's lots of that kind of out there as well. What do I do when I see someone for wellness longevity? I do check a lot of labs because your body has to be healthy. You can't have high sugars, an abnormal thyroid, abnormal hormonal levels, and then expect your skin to be great. So you basically, if there's any fires happening in the engine and the body, you want to fix those things. Also with inflammatory skin disease, if you have things like eczema, psoriasis, other reasons why your body might not be optimized, starting to look at things like Botox, et cetera, are fine, but it's sort of putting a Band-Aid on the problem. So I do check a lot of labs. I do check thyroid if they haven't had it done, sugars. Iron storage is extremely important, your ferritin levels for hair growth and other functions in the body. And the procedures are things we talked about. Botox, PRP, microneedling, those are all things we can do once we've kind of figured out, you know, what's going on with your body. Oral medicines, of course, some people will do low dose oral isotretinoin, which is a retinoid, metformin we talked about. Hydrolyzed collagen is just super popular. Most of the formulations, not a whole lot gets into your skin because it's a protein. It's broken up in your GI tract. Verisol collagen and some other collagens do have good data that a little bit does get into the skin. So those might be ones to kind of look into. Oral hyaluronic acid is one that people take as well. All the antioxidants like we talked about, vitamin C, retinoid, resveratrol, quercetin, quercetin, nicotinamide, as we discussed. Those are definitely popular ones. Then there are new therapies, not necessarily new to the world, but new in this indication. One class are the mTOR inhibitors, the most famous one being sirolimus, rapamycin. That is being studied quite a bit, and it has shown to improve collagen expression and skin appearance. So it's an interesting one, and it seems to inhibit fibroblast senescence. So that released old, depressed-looking fibroblast cell that's causing all the trouble. It seems to inhibit that process. So interesting one to kind of keep an eye on. There are also senolytics. Senolytics mean they go in and they actually kill those sad cells so you can renew them. Because if those cells form, once they're there, they're creating, if you remember, the bad enzymes that are killing off everything in the nearby area. So therapies that go in and actually kind of scavenge and take out some of those old bad cells can be very, very helpful. There are things in the pipeline like heat shock protein, 90 inhibitors, BCL2 family inhibitors, and the natural compounds are being looked at like quercetin. Quercetin. So lots of interesting things happening. There's the SIRT2-in-1 gene, SIRT1, which is the NAD plus dependent deacetylase. It's implicated in oxidative stress response, inflammation, mitochondrial function, and thereby in development of just a lot of age-related things. We're talking about skin, but of course there's collagen and age-related wear and tear in every part of our body. Collagen 1 in the skin is not the only collagen we have in our body. There's lots of different collagens in your joints, heart, all the other areas that develop dysfunction over time. So these overall therapies that are being looked at can really help. So lots of exciting things happening. And anti-aging itself, or aging itself, I should say, has been added to the ICD code, meaning making it a medical diagnosis. That's, you know, somewhat controversial. Is that pathological? Is that an abnormal process? Aging, do we put it there along with things like pneumonia? Is that something that we should be looking at? There's controversial thoughts about it. One is that it creates ageism and all of that. But the other thought is, well, if you give it a medical diagnosis, then companies can really kind of study it and develop drugs for it. So I can see the argument on both sides. But either way, it's added to the ICD code. And definitely the shift has been kind of more towards longevity, health span. So lots of interesting things coming up. Thanks again for joining. And we will follow up this series with another talk with when I chat with Dr. Kira Barr, and we'll go more in detail about all these topics. Thank you for listening to the Future of Dermatology podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button and share the podcast with your friends. The more you share and subscribe, the more we'll be able to grow and share our dermatology knowledge. If you have burning dermatology questions, feel free to leave them in the comment below, and we would love to address them in a future episode. And please note that this podcast is not intended to substitute for medical advice from your doctor.